Hello and welcome to episode 11 of Healing the Divide. Today I am joined by Josh Lanfear to talk about the topic of men's work. And it's a conversation that feels important and I feel grateful and excited to be having today. To give you a little bit of background on Josh, he is a men's coach and men's group facilitator. He's focused on building connection, clarity, and confidence. His journey in men's work began at the start of the pandemic when he joined a virtual men's group and began exploring years of disconnection, depression, anxiety, shame, sexual dysfunction, imposter syndrome, and burnout. In the safety of that container, he developed a passion for holding space for other men. Josh devoted the next few years attending men's retreats and earning a facilitator certification through Everyman. In 2022, he held his first in-person monthly men's group in Jupiter, Florida, where he leads men to slow down, open up, and connect with themselves and other men. Josh has spent hundreds of hours in various individual and couples coaching containers focusing on confidence, sex, and intimacy, and masculine-feminine dynamics. He now co-facilitates weekend retreats and offers individual coaching for men while working full-time as a lawyer. Josh, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Scott, for extending the invitation. It's really an honor to be here. I really enjoyed following the unfolding of this journey for you and listening to a few of your episodes. And I'm so glad you're the such a right person to have a podcast. And it's just been a joy to watch that unfold. And I'm really, really happy to be here.
Oh, thank you so much, bro. That touches my heart, man. It's been a big thing. You know, it's been a passion and it feels in alignment. You know, it feels almost like there's not a choice to be made. It just, when it came in, it just felt sort of light and easy. And that felt like a good barometer to trust. And so here we are. And I'm really loving it. And I'm really grateful for this opportunity. As I mentioned at the outset, before your intro, is just like, man, this is a wild ride being incarnate in this form at this time, in this culture, in this way. And it feels like so much of the journey that we've inherited from our predecessors around what masculinity looks like, what it means to be a man, what the roles are, what to be, how to express, all these things that we never question and just sort of get indoctrinated into. And then there comes a point in our journey where we step back and go like, wait a second, like, is this in alignment for me? Is this what I want? Is this what it's really all about? Is this what I want it to be about? So I know for so long been living with those questions inside of me, and to get to take them out into the open really is the gift of this podcast. It's like, hey, let's have this conversation and really bring it out there. And to our listeners, you know, Josh and I were just chatting a few minutes ago, and I was sharing with him how I imagine this reaching somebody, you know. So if that's you or someone in your life you could share this with, it's maybe just in it and going through a hard time. And it can feel so isolating as a guy to go through these things, because it's almost like we're taught, like, don't talk about them, stuff it down, man up, etc. And man, it leads to so much dysfunction and disease and lack of belonging and connection. And so I hope that in some way today's conversation is medicinal for people. And so that said, I wanted to kick this off by, like, really big picture for you. Like, what is your take on sort of the state of being that we call masculinity on Earth in 2024? What on the paradigm that we've inherited?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a, you're just throwing out the big pitch right off the bat. Such a beautiful question, and it's just something I've become very passionate about. But I guess let me just speak, like, to my own experience. You know, 100% agree with you that we we are born into this world and we are, we inherit structures and conditioning and roles, and we learn how to become performers in order to protect ourselves. And, you know, whether we know it or not, we end up falling back into these inherited roles and conditions that, you know, it starts with our parents and then it starts with our teachers and then with our friends. And soon, like, and then you enter adulthood. Sorry, I enter adulthood and I'm just like, okay, now what? Like, I have a degree. I'm supposed to start working full time and make money. And you do that and you're just like, this is it? Like, this is it? And you start looking around in the world and you're like, wow, there is a lot of destruction. There's a lot of injustice. There's a lot of aggression. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of depression. And it's like, what world am I living in? Like, and it's so confusing because then you just, you find yourself just like engulfed in this confusion. And then, like, you know, enter relationships and family dynamics. And it's just like, you know, I think one of the most like liberating things to like, that I learned and like now try to embody, and it's so cliche, is like, nobody actually knows what's going on here. So why not figure it out on your own instead of like take those conditions and those, the structures and the roles like that you were given without your permission, and just like put them over here. And then just like just show up and see who you want to be. And that might change like week after week, month after month. But like, man, it's just for me, just been so liberating to be like, wait, I get to decide who I am and how I show up in this world. And I don't need to just unconsciously go through the reactions and the patterns and the roles that like I inherited like from childhood through adolescence. And yeah, it's been like such an amazing journey for me, like lots of failures, but then also lots of successes. And I mean, right, like if life is always like two steps forward, one step back, like that's a life I want to live, you know? So I'll pause there. I'm not sure if I directly answered your question, but.
Yeah, 100%. I think you answered it. And then some. I glanced over at my notes and I had this oh shit moment. I was like, oh man, he just answered my next three questions too. So we were evidently on the same thought train. But no, what I want to presence what I heard inside of what you shared, which is that we can give ourselves the permission, the space, and maybe more accurately, the authority to choose the course of our own lives. And it's as though we get inculcated into this cultural condition or this familial tradition, this lineage of non-questioning. It's where somebody else is authoring our narratives of what life is supposed to look like. And then we just, you know, we try to win the game. We try to be good at it. We try to be successful. And there's not too much we can do with the information we're given at the age in which we're given it. So we sort of internalize it in such a way that it sits on the perception of, well, what if you don't? What if I don't win? What if I don't succeed? What if I can't provide? What if I don't protect? And then that fear energy starts to drive. And I was writing about this the other day, and the writing came out as, who is the author of the voice of my authority? I ask because it's not making sense to me. And that's what I heard inside what you shared. Like, wait a second, what the fuck is going on? Does anybody really know? Like, is anybody in charge here? And you look at our leaders, and I want to get into this a little bit with you later in the convo about like, what is masculinity in regards to leadership and the power for that, because it does feel to me like that is still sitting on a power over sort of structure. And as long as that's happening, it's based on keeping each other down in order to stay on top. And it just feels like that's not a viable or healthy or sustainable structure. It's not what I would want to pass on to my children. And you know, I remember when my son was four, Josh, and he was taking a bath and playing with some toys, and you know, and you know, his little like books you read them when they're that age, and bath, and all these things, and playing like with like soldiers and all these you know, fun things. And I have this moment of like, you know, I'm going to be a good dad for my son, and I'm going to like, you know, basically just extend the tradition that I've known, which was like, how do we think big about life? You know, so I say to this little four-year-old, my son's name is Kai. And I said, hey, Kai, like, what do you think you want to be when you grow up? And he's like, looks at me like absolutely fucking bewildered. And I'm like, well, you can be, you know, an athlete, you can be an actor, you can be a writer, a politician, a lawyer, doctor, you know. And he just looks at me with this blank face for about maybe 10 seconds. And then he lights up and he goes, I know. And I was like, oh, awesome. What is it? And he goes, I think I'll be Kai.
Man, I love that.
Yeah.
Like, so much wisdom comes from children, man. Like, dude, it's unbelievable.
It's amazing. And like, what a gift to receive. It was so healing for me. Like, it doesn't have to go that way. Mm-hmm. And not everything needs to be turned into a potential career, or that your identity is invested in your profession, or and your value is not connected to your productivity. And you can be like, being unto itself is fulfilling. And then, to the point of what you shared, like, so what do we want it to be about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wonder if in your seat of space holder of supporting other men, are there certain themes that are almost like currents or funnels that sort of draw people into readiness for this work?
Yeah, I think so. You know, my own journey and what I've seen in a lot of other men is you get to a crisis point, and that could look like many different things. For me, it looked like depression and anxiety, and just, it was like, you know, the volcano was ready to erupt, and I knew I needed help, but I didn't know how to ask for it. And the only, there were two things I knew what to do. It was like, well, first I got to tell mom. And second, like therapy, I guess I got to try therapy, which I did those things. And we can talk about therapy and its place in all of this. But beyond that, it was, oh, I actually don't know what kind of man I am or who I want to be. And I don't really have the best examples in my life. And so I went searching for them. And that's, I've seen that journey play out in other men that have either sat in the same space as me, or I've just connected to like one-on-one as friends or something. Like, usually, unfortunately, it gets to that crisis point where it's like, oh shit, something's going to give, and it's likely my mental health. And so it's like, how can we get the message out there that that's totally normal, and that there's spaces to try on and to join, to not only connect with like-minded people, but people who have also gone down similar paths as you, and then like people to look up to, people to call on a daily basis to be like, okay, so I'm dealing with this struggle or this emotion. And yeah, that would be probably the primary theme that I see, is like men getting the crisis point and then kind of like being like fully surrendering, being like, okay, time to start my personal development journey, time to take care of my mental health, time to like move on from toxic situations or habits or people and like find a good community.
So beautiful, man. I appreciate the inherent vulnerability that is embodied in the recognition and especially in the capacity to act upon it. And I imagine that an obstacle, I know I felt it in my own life. A good example is actually the day that you and I met. Was facilitating a men's group that night. And I remember being like so nervous all day because it feels like maybe that's the last place that it feels safe to be vulnerable about my struggles as a man with other men. I've almost felt more comfortable opening up to women like, oh, they won't judge me unless I'm in a romantic relationship with them. Then I feel, or historically have felt, and thankful to be working through that now, but have felt that those spaces are sort of like would make me unlovable. So let's hide them. But especially when it comes to other men, unless I've already established some sort of rapport, trust and safety and connection with them. But the idea of I'm going to go into an experience with a collective, a group of men whom I don't know, and I'm going to be vulnerable and open, which is really just a way of saying like I'm going to be real because of the wounds that live in that space, being like bullied as a kid, that kind of thing. There's always like the perception, at least to like that little part of me, that younger part of me, that being open and being vulnerable in front of a group of guys that I don't know will be threatening in some way. And I could even feel like as people are like trickling into the space, like a little like everybody's feeling that. And everybody's, it's not that they're sizing each other up, but they're feeling out the space and there's like degrees of bravado. And like, is this where I like hand in my man card? Do I have to become feminine in order to do men's work? Like, what the fuck? It's so, we spin out in that. And it's like, no, we don't. And so to the degree that we don't have a model or an integrated experience of what healthy masculinity looks and maybe more importantly feels like as a sensory experience, we're seeking it out in these uncertain and unfamiliar spaces with people who are likewise seeking it out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, whoa, that feels scary. And then, you know, thankfully like that was an experience where it was like, we're just going to do it. We're just going to go down in flames or something beautiful is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to do it halfway. And, you know, and sometimes we just go for it. And that was a beautiful moment. But I wonder, like, as in your facilitation experience, if you've experienced things like that within yourself and within the group.
Yeah, totally. And you just segued into what I wanted to say right off the bat, which is, what's most personal is most universal. And I did not come up with that saying. I stole it from another men's coach. But when I heard that, it just resonated to my core. And now inevitably, I say it at each one of my men's groups, because this experience just inevitably comes up. You know, as men, we tend to, right, like you said, just man up, you know, don't be a pussy, just hold in your emotions, shove it all down and keep going. And like, that's very detrimental. And then once you actually start, like once you open the door and start saying like, hey, actually, I'm having this experience and it sucks. Like, I'm really sad or I'm really angry. And then like another man inevitably 100% of the times, like, oh yeah, me too. Yeah. I'm in it right now, or I was in it last year. And it's just, it's such an illusion that we're so unique that we experience these hardships, these feelings, these emotions, these struggles. And we're the only ones on this planet that are having that experience, you know? So there's so much power in just that energy of another man being like, yeah, me too. And now it's like, you're fully being seen. You're fully being received. It gives you the permission to go even deeper, to be like, oh, well, let me keep telling you then, because you understand. Now I feel understood. And there's just like, I mean, there's just so much power in that. And I don't want to keep bringing up like the therapy thing, but like that part right there, I found was missing in therapy, right? Like the therapist that I would sit with throughout my life, few different ones, they always served an amazing purpose at like that specific point in time. But there was never that, oh yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's sterilized in the role identification. I couldn't agree a thousand like anymore. I actually wrote that down as you were talking, role of therapy, because I wanted to come back to it. Mm-hmm. Because yeah, it's not maybe, you know, nothing against therapy, it is what it is, but there is something therapeutic when somebody goes, I totally get you. I experience that too. And it's that sense of being gotten and mm-hmm. and like, okay. And yeah, so as, and it's funny you use the saying, I share the same thing all the time, which is the idea of that which we perceive as personal is incredibly universal. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome that we both are in the awe of that recognition, because there's something about when we experience it as personal, we keep it private. And it's like, that's how it sustains that notion. So it's like, what's wrong with me? Like, this is a flaw in my character that I've got to like wrestle mm-hmm. with, and negotiate with, and overcome or let go of and get rid of and conquer. And you could see all those inherited sort of ideals of masculinity as the orientation to anything that feels difficult. But the last thing we want to do is air that out in any sort of public way. And, because that violates the creed of manhood in some way. And the reality, the real courageous thing is to call that out. First and foremost, I think it's bullshit, because it's not the reality of the experience that we're really having. And we've seen the outcomes: increased rates of anxiety, increased rates of depression, increased rates of suicide, much higher for men. I think I could be wrong. Somebody could Google this and fact check me, totally open. I think it's something like 40% higher suicide rates for men than women. You know, I mean, we're internalizing. I mean, you can only do that for so long before it combusts. And mm-hmm. so, I asked you the question, what was like that, the current that leads people in, and you shared, it's like a crisis point. And it's like, man, that breaks my heart in a way, because it's like, can we catch it earlier on, mm-hmm. you know, can we catch it on its way up before it becomes crisis? I think there's a couple of things in there. It's like, one, to the degree of our capacity, if we could have more conversations like this, if we could destigmatize that suppression process, that idea that this is just about me and it's personal, as we universalize it, it can become more ordinary to just be a human with actually a set of emotions that mm-hmm. we experience, go figure, and that we could just in healthy ways, that it doesn't need to even be within the context of a therapy session, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't need to be so hidden behind closed doors. We can talk about our human experiences and get to that. Yeah, same. I'm going through that too. And then to the degree that you are in that crisis point, to recognize maybe it's a perception of crisis, that it's actually not just a crisis point, but maybe it's an inflection point where mm-hmm. it is an invitation to reach out. Like, reach out. And there are places, Google Men's Work, look up Josh, look up Everyman, which you mentioned, I want to hear more about. I love to do this work. We have other friends we know in our community that like to do this work, and that there's such a sense of allyship and collaboration and mutual respect. And like, there's, I almost feel like we're digging, right? And then like somebody comes along doing this work and they're like, I want to do this work. And you're like, sweet, pick up a shovel. Let's go. Let's augment this thing. Let's make that make, let's synergize and make this movement move. And so I'm really appreciative of the work that you do and the purity that I can feel in your heart as you talk about this.
And I have to just pause real quick and say, like you yourself have been such a fundamental person and inspiration in my life, whether, and I don't even think you know it, because, you know, I spent years doing the work, right? But in a virtual container, hopping on Zoom every Sunday evening for 2 years with the same group of guys. And it was amazing. I did so much. I mean, amazing. But there's limits to the virtual container. I then got to a point where I was like, I looked around and I was like, I don't have these same relationships that I have in my virtual container with these guys who live across the country in my community. And so one of the first things I did, like, to go out into the community to do the work or to be vulnerable or to connect with men on a deeper level, was that breathwork session that you held at Kula a couple of years ago. And I just remember being like, this is exactly what I've been doing in the virtual container. And here it is, like, in my backyard. Mm-hmm. And so that was such a pivotal moment for me, because then I realized, like, oh, I want more in-person connection. Like, the virtual containers are so wonderful, but they're limiting. And here's somebody in my community, like, showing up, right, like, with all of your experiences and your emotions, and like you said, your fears, or your like going into that, and but you created such like a safe, beautiful container for we had like 20 plus men in that room doing some like amazing breath work, releasing. And for me, I was just like, oh my God, I could do this here at home in my community. And so I know it's a long ramble, but like, I just want to like highlight that, because you mentioned the breathwork session.
Thank you. That means so much to me. I didn't know that. And I will definitely take a moment here just to like take a breath and receive that.
Yeah.
It's something that I feel like in the intimacy of when we share something of value and meaning, that it's so important that we receive it genuinely to keep the cycle of that intention really moving. Chronically. So thank you, and fully received, and grateful that anything, like, I only want to show up in a way that supports healing. That's really it. And I could feel that when I was 4 years old. Maybe that's why I asked my son when he was 4 years old. It's like been a thing this whole time. But that was different. Like, it was different to be in a container of just guys. And I felt this today, you know, I share with you, I was like a little nervous. Like, I was like, I feel like a little pregame jitters coming on the podcast. Like, but I'm also excited. Like, I crave, I guess, is actually the feeling. I crave like brotherhood. I crave like that sense of like, wow, these are meaningful connections with other guys. It's not just like, let's go have a beer after work and like complain about our wives and talk about goals for our careers and like what our retirement plans are, like that we're actually connecting in a like meaningful way. That unto itself is so medicinal to our spirits, and just knowing that the pathways are open for sharing to happen. It's incredible, and it is unique, like you said, from therapy, where we're not being diagnosed, and it's like we're just being connected with. It's so valuable. I wonder, are you familiar with the work of John Wineland?
A little bit. I'm familiar with like his daughter, Claire, and the foundation they started, but I'm generally familiar with him, yeah, his work.
I'll share this with you and our viewers and for listeners that aren't on YouTube. I'm holding up a book. It's called From the Core. It's a great book for men's work. It's the subtitle is a new masculine paradigm for leading with love, living your truth, and healing the world. And it's really beautiful. There was a piece from it that I wanted to draw into our convo, and I wanted to share his thoughts on what are the obstacles that men have in entering into this work, and then see if this syncs up with what you've seen, or if we could add to it in some way. So he shared three core obstacles in the book. The first one was men having not trained themselves in mindfulness and meditative practices in order to ask the deeper questions about the true meaning of life rather than like winning at the game of success. I'm putting paraphrasing here. The second one was a hard time connecting to feeling, and here isn't feeling being like the emotions, but also our bodies, our nervous systems, and our environment, including the people within it. And then three, the skill sets to affect environment with conscious awareness and embodied sensitivity.
Man, I love that. And all of it really resonates, especially that second one. Because when you first like were when you first were going down this thread, the obstacle that came to my mind right away was, well, for me and for a lot of men that I've worked with, like they don't have the skills to like even just slow down and be like, how do I feel right now? Like, where do I feel that in my body? And then even if we might have those skills, it's another skill then to put language to it. And then it's another skill to have the vulnerability to express it. So, you know, for me, like coming from a family that feel like emotions and expressing them were not always very present, right? So when I got to adulthood and I started relating with a woman who was very much in touch with her emotions, with her body, came from a family that emotions and expression were very present, I was just like, I have no idea. I feel good. I feel bad. Like I didn't even know, have the language to put to what I was feeling. But even beyond that, like I didn't even know how I was feeling. And so I view that as that was a big obstacle for me, and I see it with other men because then they might have a perception of what men's work is or what a men's group is, and either like fear or judgment comes up, and really be underneath the judgment is just fear. And it's because like they themselves, like they're like, well, I wouldn't fit in that group. Like I don't know how, and they might not even be able to admit this to themselves, but like the intuitively just like, no, like, well, that's very uncomfortable. I'm not comfortable with my emotions. I'm not comfortable with sharing my emotions. Maybe they've been taught that their emotions are wrong and they need to suppress them. So yeah, I mean, that to me is like the biggest obstacle, and I'm so glad that it was in one of the three from John.
Yeah, it's, I'd love to take like time to be with each of the obstacles and unpack them a little bit. And but since you kind of honed in on the second one, let's start there of like, really being able to feel into the experience that we're having. And yeah, having number one, you actually think one and two go together in the sense of like, well, how do I become aware of the feelings? Well, through those meditative practices is one way to tune into the body and realize that feeling is actually located in our body. Wherever we go, we bring these things with us. So there's some sort of localizing presence that I can tune in. That was mind blowing for me. I probably heard that for, I don't even know, a decade before I believed it. I mean, no, feelings are things like thoughts. They're like these amorphous energies. They're not, I can't like locate an emotion in my body. Like, that's crazy. And I was teaching yoga where we were like opening the body, and but they lived very compartmentalized. And so that was interesting, is like learning how to tune into what I'm having. And I'll offer this for people that might be in a similar space. When I'm having an emotion, to practice slowing down my breath and starting to just tune in to my body. And in the last podcast, I was with a psychotherapist, and we actually spoke about a process called interoception, which is like our capacity to feel what's present in our body. And almost the way she described it is like, can I feel my hand without actually like moving my hand, but like from inside my hand, you know? And it's like, okay, so when I'm having some sort of emotional reaction, which we know as guys, we have as humans, we have, can I just cultivate a practice? You usually will start actually with like environment. So it's almost like an outside in. And then ultimately it like comes back out as behavior. So it's almost like a cycle, but like starting with the senses and like, what do I hear? And like tuning to environment, because it's like brings us present and sensitive. And then what's happening in my body. And I might feel something like collapsing in my heart, or rage in my abdomen, or my low belly feels like pins and needles or fears and nerves. Maybe my hands are making fists, if I'm angry, or my heart is aching if I'm sad, and like what's happening with my energy. Do I feel depleted? Do I feel enlivened? Just kind of tuning into those various biomarkers has been helpful to have correlates. And then if it feels like too much to work at the emotional level, to address just the physical energetic experience, be like, I'm going to take deep breaths, I'm going to unclench my jaw, I'm going to soften my eyes, I'm going to let my belly relax, I'm going to maybe feel my feet on the ground, maybe shake out a little bit, and then how that regulates the nervous system. So then we can become more present to like, okay, this is what's happening, this is what caused it, this is how I perceived it. But trying to put that processing or that analytical overlay onto a dysregulated nervous system is really difficult. And I think when, if you know, we look at trauma responses like fight, flight, freeze, fawn, all these things, like there's only one that sort of like syncs up to the masculine, inherited masculine interpretation, which is fight, you know? And so then we when in, and I think that's not only directed outwardly in situations, but that is born from directing it inwardly. So now I'm creating a war within myself around the experience that I'm having. And then it's exiling off parts of myself that I don't want to own. So I end up shaming them and suppressing them. And then whatever's coming up in the environment around me, I'm going to project. If I'm disowning my own, right to feel sadness, let's say, because that feels like a feminine, air quotes, experience. Well, then let's put it into the context of relationship. I'm going to reject that outwardly as well if I see that in my partner. And so, how do I embrace that in me so that I can embrace and support that in her? And the capacity for the ground to say, yeah, and instead of saying, this has to shut down so that I can be steady, it's, I'm steady, so this can be what it is and be in its way. And that's, to me, like how the ground of like the quality of healthy masculinity of ground can support those parts rather than deny those parts in service of sustaining an idea of being grounded instead of the reality of it.
Man, there's just so much good stuff in what you just said. And I'm starting to get like, it's just filling me up, man. I love talking about this stuff.
Yeah, me too.
But Yeah, I just couldn't agree with you anymore. And it doesn't have to be difficult, right? Like the practice of just like closing your eyes and taking a deep breath and just being like, okay, like what am I feeling like in my chest or in my stomach or in my hands, you know? And it's like, at least for me, I think most men, like we, whether it's the competitive side of us or like the, you know, the experience where we just kind of keep getting better, like so getting the reps in, it seems to be important for men. Well, like you could get the reps in a dozen times today by doing that. Just like close your eyes, take a deep breath and say, okay, what do I feel in my body? And then what do I feel emotionally? You know? And those two things are so connected, right? Like I totally prescribe to like the body keeps the score. And if you can get into your body and slow down, then you can start to access those emotions and they don't hijack you in such a scary, uncomfortable way. You can start to be like, oh, I could poke this or I could play with this and I could kind of start to like see it as almost like a separate object, right? Like in guided meditations or any sort of like body work, it's like I found that it's common to be like, what, you know, can you put a shape to that energy? Is there a color? Does the energy want to say anything? You know, and you could just start to play with it in such a easy way. And it doesn't need to be like woo-woo, right? Like it's just stuff you could integrate into your daily life if you want, whether you're driving in the car or waiting for an appointment or something. Like you can take 30 seconds to just take a deep breath and drop it into your body. And I think it's such an important tool for men to learn, because at least in my experience, I was so disconnected from my body. So like the start of my journey was just learning how to feel like physically in my body.
Yeah, I could hear so much in that, and it felt to me more like curiosity, and was one theme I heard in what you shared, and the other one was accessibility, and maybe even more accurately availability, that when we're available to receive ourselves, I love that what you just shared too. I call that clean as I go. Just like how I make my way through my day. So I try to set things that I do fairly regularly, like wash my hands or like start my ignition in my car or something. Like there's some element of like opening and closing doors, things that are just sort of like mundane that can become intentional rituals of taking a breath or two of pause and noticing without judgment what is occurring, and just cultivating that witness consciousness around the experience that I am experiencing. And that unto itself has sort of a clearing effect. It's almost like we're shaking off the etch-a-sketch. So whatever's accumulated since the last time I did that, and I'm building that self-regulation, that co-regulation, that resilience capacity to return to center, return to center, return to center. So it does feel like a wrap, so that when then something that is triggering in my environment presents itself, it's almost like it defaults back to the reps that I've done. They are now like stored accumulative merit that I can call upon as like virtue for the thing. And then if I have that capacity present, it's almost like the trigger is, and it doesn't always happen by any means, but when it does, it's so fucking profound that it's like, oh, wait a second. It's not about the thing that I think it's about, but it's what it's pushing on. And the fact that it's getting pushed on is awesome. It's awesome because it means it's coming up into my conscious awareness to be rewired and to be met with a different awareness than the way it got imprinted. And this is an opportunity for some sort of, the perception of that which limits us is actually liberating us. And that's to me the idea of obstacle anyway. And I'm a yoga teacher. I love yogic mythology. We talk a lot about Ganesh, the elephant, you know, head god, and he's always translated as the remover of obstacles. And I always think that's such like the misperception, because that statement actually fortifies this idea. Like, we hear obstacle, like think about like neurolinguistic programming, like we then create the idea of obstacle in our experience, and then we think, okay, what's the next up? How do I overcome obstacle? Now I'm right back in the trap that mm-hmm. thinking is the quote unquote obstacle. And so yeah. now I'm generating it in the attempt to be free from it. And so instead of that, I've always looked at Ganesha like the alchemist. Like, he is the remover of the perception of obstacle, where it's actually more like mirage. It's something that looks solid, but if you move towards it, it actually portals you into a different dimension of consciousness.
Yeah.
So the trigger is the ally.
Yes, I totally agree. The obstacle is the way. I feel like when I get triggered now, it hurts. It sucks, right? Like anger, I get filled with rage or shame still. But man, now that I have the knowledge that like, okay, I'm going to feel the rage, I'm going to feel the shame, but I know that this is an opportunity to search for that nugget of wisdom. I know that this is an opportunity to continue to elevate my own consciousness, my own energy, my own vibration, and show up in a way that I actually want to show up, right? And it's just, yeah, once you kind of start thinking that way, right, the perception of the obstacles removed, and you just start seeing like the gift or the wisdom in everything. I mean, shoot, isn't that liberation? Yeah.
It's ironic that the thing that we thought was inhibiting us is actually cracking us open. And I think what it's, as I'm understanding it at this moment of my journey, maybe even when I go back and listen to this podcast in a week or a month or a year of a different comprehension, I kind of hope I do to some degree, but what feels like the sustainable truth inside of it is authenticity, that it's cracking me open into greater authenticity, and that there's a certain virality to authenticity. There's a certain sense that if I'm just being real and true, and I don't mean enmeshed with whatever emotion I happen to be experiencing in a moment, but my most authentic truth of who and what I am in any given moment, if I can, just to parse that out, I mean, it doesn't mean that I'm always speaking from the part of me that is triggered, but I'm speaking for the part mm-hmm. of me that is triggered, right? It's like, how can I give voice to my anger without giving anger my voice? Mm-hmm. Like that yeah. subtlety is what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. And because while it's so important to like be able to get in touch or in tune with our emotions in our body, it's also important to like realize like, oh, I don't need to identify with this emotion or with this experience. Like that doesn't define who I am in this moment, in this moment, in the next moment, you know? And that's another little subtle step that a lot of people they don't see, right? They just like immediately go from like, oh, I feel sad, and so I must be depressed, right? Mm-hmm. I feel anger all the time, and so I just must be a mean person, you know? And it's like being able to break that, like, yes, it's important to grapple and play with your emotions and release them and express them and have a healthy relationship with them. But then you like want to make sure too, like emotions is just energy, right? Like, and it's temporary, they're fleeting, and there has to be that break from like identifying with them.
Yeah. I think you just nailed it. It really is the identity crisis piece, because
yeah.
it's the pendulation of I don't feel anything, suppress, 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 to like, I feel everything, to I am everything, I am this, instead of my emotion telling me how I am, I'm interpreting it like it's telling me who I am. And that is generating this experience of getting now whipped around by it. And what I'm hearing you say is when we can hold space to feel it, to be with it without being it, then we can give it the space, the ground to be. And it's like, I probably would say it like this, like if we could let the emotion have its true nature, then it would let us have ours.
Yeah, it's a wonderful way to put it.
Yeah, that's how it feels in me. So I almost sometimes see it in terms of like, where does this, and this is actually a helpful tool perhaps as well, it's like, where does this idea live in a sustainable and healthy way in nature? And it's almost like the masculine principle feels to me like the steady ground that when in its healthy establishedness, it's not saying no to the nature of things that move. So if like emotions were like waves, and this, and consciousness is like the masculine principle, is like the ground underneath it. It's like the water's washing over the ground. It's going back and forth, and the ground isn't saying to the waves, like, please stop moving so that I can be the ground. It's also not going, it's not leaving its nature as the ground and becoming the waves, right? It's actually sitting here going, I know I'm not the waves, but I'm not saying no to them either.
Yeah, you're just allowing.
Just allowing.
Yeah.
So if we put it in the context of coupleship for a moment, and this is tricky because, you know, obviously with like different gender identities and masculine and feminine, male, female, you know, cis, trans, and being in like, it gets, there's increasing degrees of complexity and all of those things. But if we could maybe tread sensitively, but also be willing to like stumble and fumble our way a little bit, like to the authenticity point of doing the best we can with maybe some ideas, maybe there's new terms we can define instead of like this is my inner masculine, my inner feminine, whatever it is. Like I realize I'm working in my own journey with like, I don't want people to feel excluded from being who they are, their true nature, and figuring out like how that pendulum is working with society as its own thing. But I guess like in terms of the, you know, maybe masculine, feminine qualities, if we were to use that terminology, in terms of thinking about nervous systems, it feels like there's, you know, the relationship between those two. And I don't necessarily mean male, female, but maybe sometimes it bends in those certain curvatures or contours. So when I can feel something like in the relationship and in coupleship specifically space of like big emotion arise, like I can feel it get uncomfortable for me. And when it's arising from my partner, like she's the water and I'm like the ground, and like how to turn towards my own nervous system so I could come over in a sense to her side, instead of being adversarial in my disposition, I can be like, yeah, that's fucking crazy. Or I feel what you're saying. And I don't feel so like attacked or blamed or threatened.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah, I see your big emotion, and like, right on. Like, I totally get that. And I remove the idea that somehow it's going to like dismantle me if you move through stuff like that.
Yeah. Or like, for me, it was always taking the feminine expression personally and as criticism, like, oh, I did something wrong, that's why you're feeling this way. And then the other masculine stereotype is like, well, how can I fix it? You know, instead of just allowing it and letting it play out and holding it and nurturing it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Go on.
No, I mean, you just hit on a couple of biggies. Is like, you know, like taking it personally, as if it as if it is revealing some terminable flaw in you. So then you defend and project back out, and then it's like this karmic dance that we get hooked into, and nobody's being genuinely seen. It's almost like now our images that we're so invested in protecting are in coupleship, rather than the authenticity of ourselves. And I think that means like those parts of us that are carry those imprints are often younger. They're like the wounded internal other, the little ones inside of us. And that's another piece that for a guy, maybe it's part of the guy-ness of it all, but for years I would internalize that idea, similar to the emotions live in the body. What are you talking about? Like inner child, I don't have an inner child, I'm me. You know, this sounds like it, you know, I'm working through like maybe I'm schizophrenic, but there's multiple me's in here, and now there's inner children, there's a family, there's an internal family system, there's more, there's okay, you know. And what I see is like ultimately the work is that there's a through line of self that moves through that, and that we want to integrate those parts that aren't fundamentally ever separate, but feel like they are. And if I'm not willing to acknowledge the experience that they're having, then the truth is that the trigger's pressing on them, and they're going to be the ones that act out. And similar to the experience actually of going into the body and going, where does this live? I started to try this process and this practice on, which was when I'm in the middle of a heated, triggered experience. And this is sort of within the space of coupleship as well, how I'm thinking about it, but it's really applicable anywhere. This is where a lot of my wounding, rejection, abandonment, pain lives. But I started to go, how old do I feel right now? And man, I mean, what a question of like a pattern disruptor.
And you could just pull on that thread for as long as you want, right? Because it might just be like instantly you might go, oh, I'm 5 years old and I'm sitting in kindergarten right now, and the teacher just, you know, whatever, called me out in front of the class, and now I'm embarrassed or something. And so what a beautiful question to be able to, like you said, like a through line, right through our whole being, to be able, like we can travel back. We can go back to younger Josh and younger Scott and hold them, right, in like a theoretical way, or, you know, and talk to them even and nurture them and be like, I got you. I got you, little Josh, you know. And it's such a, what a powerful question. I mean, I've played with that myself. I mean, a lot.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And it feels like a gift for that part of me to receive this part of me. It's like, you know, it's like I've written like letters to him and have these conversations, and you know, and let him know like I see you, I've got you, I choose you, I love you. I'm not going anywhere. And then like get curious a little bit, spend some time there, and like what did you need to say in those moments that you didn't get to? Like I just went back to being, as you were sharing that hypothetical scenario in kindergarten. There was I had like really horrible asthma as a kid, and it was scary because I would have these asthma attacks where like I would lose my breath, so I'd constantly feel like I was going to die, and it would be create panic attacks, and then we're rushing to the hospital, and then we go to the hospital, and it was severe. So I would live inside of these like oxygen tents around the bed, and I would stay there for days, and then I would come back to school. And I come back to school, and there was like the class as a whole, a collective, and then there was me, the, you know, bubble boy, you know, and hearing that and going in, I can remember Chris W, I won't say last names in case, whatever, honor privacy, but like pulling me by the hair back and like squeezing Elmer's glue into my mouth. And, you know, and if I could say something, what would I say? I'd say like, you don't get to do that to me, or, mm-hmm. I belong here. And, you know, what did you need to happen? Well, I need to feel included. So what are we going to do? We're going to actually go seek out a group of guys and create a safe space to like belong and have friends. And like, I'm going to give you that now. Like, yeah. I'm going to do this work. And that's why when it gets scary and it feels like, oh God, this is pushing on everything. I know it's pushing on him. And I don't want to not do it because it's hard. I want to show him that like we can do it. But I don't want to be like, you know, oh, you're scared to like go outside. What, you know, we'll go walk down the middle of the busiest street. But I might like do it in baby steps, might do it in incremental spaces and let him, I think, ultimately learn that he can trust me. So he doesn't have to be so hypervigilant about all the potential threats. And because it's like all he has to do is like, sit on the floor of the bedroom and play G.I. Joes, you know, like he just wants to do that. And mm-hmm. and so I feel like attending to these parts of ourselves, giving voice to that, having it modeled, how do we dialogue, how do we integrate? It's been wild in my coaching work, and some of the clients I've worked with are at the highest perceived level of masculinity and success, where it's like, and then they hit the point that you said, we're like, fuck, this isn't it. And then we learn how to cultivate internal dialogue with these younger parts of ourselves. And that's amazing. And just handing it back to you, the way this has shown up in the interaction space of coupleship is because I'm doing this work within myself, in spaces of relationship, whether coupleship or not, when I see somebody acting big, it is an instant alert that I'm in interaction with someone who's feeling small. Mm-hmm. And I try to remember, oh, this might be a 5-year-old right now, and they're getting to act out the experience in a new way. If I can show up that doesn't like comport to the perpetualizing of the old narrative, if I can disconfirm that and be like, yeah, I totally hear you. And like, what is there something that you need to hear that I can honor and express back for you and model back for you? And it's like, it's,
I know,
amazing.
Pattern disruption, like you said earlier.
Yeah,
totally. And it's being able to do that as like, say the masculine essence in the partnership is, I mean, there's like, what greater gift could you give to your partner than doing what you just described, you know? And then I like to think of like relationships as like very circular, especially like when both partners are on their path, right? What their healing journey, their personal development, whatever you want to, whatever words you want to put to it, but like they're both like traveling upwards. I just like, I notice it's like there's this circular energy. So when you can give your partner that pattern disruption, that ground to stand on or to like put their expression on, and it's fully received and it's not taking personal and it's not interpreted as criticism, and you don't shut down or project back like as the masculine, like all you're giving that gift and allowing her to like feel held, and is just going to turn into more trust, more surrender, more softness. And like, it's all just going to come back to you. And then in your moments when you're triggered or you're confused, like very emotional, but confused or whatever it is, like your partner's then going to give that right back to you, because without even like consciously choosing to, they're just going to do it.
It's wild. It is getting infused into the third space of the relationship itself. And now it's just living in the ethers of that, that environment, and it's available for each person to draw upon and bring in. And it's kind of wild, right? Because it is wired, as you were saying, to like it to want to defend, like it's a flaw. Even like if our partner's making a request of us, like if they really are saying, "Can you do this differently?" It can feel so hard not to receive. Personally speaking, maybe it's not for you to hear your experience. I don't want to project, but it can feel so hard for me to not receive that request as criticism, and being able to discern the difference, and it can feel then scary. Started to play with the idea of like, okay, I can feel the part of me that's coming up. He wants to block what's being said and then put it back on the other person or defend, "I did do that. You're not doing that," whole kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And instead, really, you know, the way my partner talks about this is like, travel into my country with only your passport, like leave mm-hmm. it all out and just hear experiences. It's really beautiful. So if I just take my passport and I leave my like fucking, you know, decorated luggage, and I just listen and I imagine what that would feel like. And there's a part of me that feels as though he's advocating or being truthful or objective, or there's some sort of righteousness that he typically feels in pointing out some sort of other perspective, but it's really to protect the part that thinks he's being criticized and doesn't know how to receive it in any way other than blame. So mm-hmm. asking him to take a leap of faith and just, we've done it that way so many times, it always leads us further downstream into deeper rupture. So in service of repair, what if instead I said these really hard words to go out, come out of the mouth, which is, "I hear you. Thank you for sharing that with me. That experience feels intense. I know we're just beginning to sort through it, but I'm honored to be the person to sort through it with you." You know?
Yeah. Wow. I'm here with you. I'm not going anywhere. You know, if she has an abandonment wound or something. So simple, like simple expressions just like will blow her mind, you know, and she'll be like, "Oh my God, you are here. Oh wow, I can now go into my depth because I feel you here with me."
Yes.
And to like tie it back to like the whole the broader conversation of men's work, right? Like, you can't do that with your partner if you can't do it yourself, you know.
Amen, bro. Yeah, it is. We meet each other at the depth of which we're meeting ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's not a, you know, judgment, you know, claim or anything like that. It's just, it's an invitation to continue to swim into those depths.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So do you experience these ideas then as existing to that end of like a continuum, like there's a masculine to feminine continuum that exists within each human being, regardless of gender?
Totally, 100%. But I myself know that I have a lot of feminine energy, and I know, and I allow myself to like flow with it when, you know, it's appropriate, I guess, like air quotes, for lack of a better word. And for me, it was like, I was really comfortable actually with my feminine energy and essence. I had to learn and practice like, oh, well, how do I engage with my masculine? Because how I was engaging with my masculine energy was, you know, very toxic, right? Like, I know toxic masculinity is such a loaded word nowadays, and I don't like to throw that around at all, but I myself, like, when I look back and like many years of like me and my masculine, like I have no other word but to define it as like toxic, you know. So yeah, I totally agree. What's that?
Can you Can you unpack that a little bit? Like, what was your,
I'm sorry, you, can I unpack that?
yeah, what was your expression of toxic? If you're open to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. So, okay, I feel like there's so much there, but like my the way I treated women, my relationship with pornography, how I would unconsciously like manipulate women, especially women that I was in relationship with. There's the obvious stuff like projected anger and aggression. What else? Yeah, like dismissing other people's experiences, making jokes in like a in passive aggressive ways, especially with women and, that I was in relationship with. And I still catch, you know, catch myself doing it. Yeah, it could be so subtle. Like toxic masculinity doesn't always have to be like this puffed out chest, big ego, like getting into fights and putting other people down thing. Like it could be real subtle, just like there were things that I would say or do that like now I see that I'm like, that's manipulative, you know? And so
Could you
I
give an example?
what's that?
Could you give an example?
Yeah, so let me one example is like when I was a teenager and in my early 20s, I learned that if I just opened up the door enough with a woman, like if I just showed her a little bit of my vulnerability in my heart, then I could, you know, get into her pants, right? I could take her home and we could, you know, hook up and have sex. But then as soon as that would develop into like a relationship or whatever, then when like real intimacy comes knocking on the door, that door would close but like shut, and I was unavailable at that point because I was only willing to like share certain parts of my life and my experience like just slightly enough in order to like her be like, wow, he's sensitive, and or wow, he's like, you know, really being honest with me. And at the time, I wasn't aware that I was doing that, like by any means. But when I look back, I'm like, huh, that's very interesting because I was only opening that door ever so slightly with women that I wanted to sleep with. And so now, like, when I look back, I'm like, that's very toxic.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you for grounding it in example.
Yeah.
It's so relatable. And in terms of the maybe the counterpart to that, what is an example of genuine intimacy? What
I mean,
does
I think
healthy
it's
intimacy look like to you?
a genuine example is what you had just described, you know, being able to hold your partner's emotions and experience. It's being able to crack that door wide open and say, here are all my skeletons in the closet. Here's all the little shame piles that I've been that need flashlights pointed at them. It's being able to like tap into the energy and the eroticism of intimacy, and you could put on different roles, you know, or what it can look like so many different things, but being open to exploring in a safe, genuine, authentic way where like the ground rule is like, I'm here with you, I got you, you know, we're only going to explore further as comfortable that or as comfortable as we both are, you know. Yeah, I'll pause there. I feel like I could ramble, but
Yeah, no, that's it's incredible. I can viscerally recall the feeling of being maybe for the first time in a relationship where an insecurity was emerging and I wanted to shut it down, and she caught me in the hiding and then the like covering over with something that looked more like the standard of what I would want to project as attractive. And she was like, so wait, tell me about the insecure. I was like, nah, you don't want to know about that, you know? And she's like, actually I do. And I was like, you know, and I got like a little like squirrely inside, and she was kind of like, try me, like test me out with it, you know? And I'm like, oh, it's not even about you. It's about me. Like, I want to work on these things before I present them to another. Yeah. So I'm in the business of hiding them and then presenting a more lovable version of me. And she's like, yeah, she's like, I get that. And we all have these things. And so I don't love you less for them, but to the degree that you're willing to show me them, and that to me demonstrates authentic courage. And that's a quality that I really love. And it was just a complete sort of unwire and rewire. Mm-hmm. Talk about a pattern disruption and a pattern replacement of like, wait a second. So showing you my insecurities makes me more attractive. This doesn't make sense, you know? And and so it's like, well, you recognize like, man, that's pretty wild that you have the courage to do that, that you trust me with it, that you're willing to do here, because I am here to do work on myself, because wounds that occur within relational spaces, which most of our wounds do, heal within relational spaces. So let's do our healing work together.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it's like, wow, this is going to be different than every other relationship, you know?
Totally. I mean, I love that idea of like relationships are meant to heal us, right? Because it's for both persons in the relationship, like your triggers are just going to come to the surface and you get to choose. Every trigger is an opportunity. Am I going to turn inward or am I going to turn away? And when you're both doing that together, it's like, I mean, just magic, really. Intimacy, true genuine intimacy then.
So that gives us a model of what intimacy is in its healthy expression, at least with a couple of examples. I wanted to share, you had posted something on your Instagram the other day about like guys, like your partner is not your accountability buddy. Can you unpack that? I wanted to explore that one with you too.
Yeah. So for me, like going, like backing up, when I started like my personal development journey, right? Like I put a lot onto my feminine partner. We've been together now for 6.5 years and like we've explored so many of each other's depths, but like, as I was just starting to unpack my depth, she was the only person for me to like dump that on, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but I've been like unpacking this idea of like, your woman is not your therapist. She's not your coach. She's not your mother. And as men, we want to be held accountable, which again is another great aspect of like a men's group or just any sort of men's work, because like that's the accountability we really crave, is like accountability from other men. But we like put that on our partner. And in my experience, like with my partner, I would do that. And it was like, I don't want to say like she wasn't good at it, because she was really good at it, but I started to see that it was like a job for her, right? And then I got to the point where I was like, and then if she had like forgot, like if she didn't hold me accountable, she would then feel bad and she would shame herself and she would feel less of a partner, right? And that, so like after many years of doing this, it was just like got to the point where it was like, you know what? I actually don't want to place that burden on my partner. Now I have the men in my life that I could put that burden on, and they're more than happy to do so, like to receive that and to hold me accountable. And like giving her more space within the relationship to, you know, whatever you want to call it, just to be, to be more in her flowy feminine energy, to be more surrendered and trusting. And it was kind of like, taking away that burden of like, she's not my therapist or my coach. Like I actually have a coach, and I have like plenty of men in my life that I can turn to for accountability.
Kind of locked in the middle of that. Like I chuckled because I was writing down the word burden as you spoke out the word burden. And it was as if she was carrying the burden of your work.
Yeah.
And so, I wanted to presence that next to the prior conversation that we had in terms of the joy of getting to unpack our human journey and our healing journey together, and the fine line between sharing, supporting, and burdening the weight of responsibility on our partner too. And it's not that our, you know, I'm not a big fan of like when we're like, yeah, I like put all my shit on her, because I'm like, it's not shit. It's actually like hurt that is looking for like, you know, some salve here and some healing. So let's not like invalidate and criticize the parts of ourselves that are figuring life out. And like there's a beautiful and like powerful experience of taking accountability for our own process and going to the places that can support us so that we're not constantly infusing that into this space. And I think that's such a delicate thing to when we talk about the confluence of these different energies, it's like, I don't want to shut down and be like, I don't share things with you. I just show up as this idealized version of me. And I don't want to put everything onto you and come to you with everything. Too, I want to find where my places are, where my people are, who I share with, what content I share where, to what degree, where's reciprocity and capacity present. And maybe I take aspects of the work that I'm doing here to this relationship, but instead of like every single thing that comes up becomes her process to enter into, instead of like, let me manage mine and really, and what I hear inside of this, you know, coming out of the polarities there of either like it, like do all this with me and for me maybe, and or like I don't show you any of it, is growing a container.
Mm-hmm.
How do we grow a literal container that we can say, this is what I'm feeling, this is where I go with it, this is how I hold it, this is how I travel with it. And we over time develop a capacity to move through life with experience and know where to take it. And because our partners are so available or accessible, but not available to us all the time in any given moment, we can, I think, unconsciously just assume like, here's this thing. And having some discernment can be really powerful.
Yeah, I love that you brought this into focus and shared this perspective. And I totally agree, because we were just talking about like a relationship is a container for healing. It's a container to explore the depths of each other and the closets that we've kept closed before, you know, coming together. And that's so important. And we also need like other outlets, like we need other containers. And so just like that the idea of accountability, you know, I love when somebody can keep me accountable. If I say I'm going to do something to another person, I'm going to do it. Well, instead of burdening my partner, because it could be stuff that has to deal with outside of the relationship, right? It could be something professionally. I want to make, five sales calls this week, or, whatever it is. It's like, okay, express that to your friend or your container, your men's group, let them hold you accountable and like kind of because the at least in my experience, and I think I've seen it with some other men, is once they start traveling down this path of personal development or their healing journey, their partner is like the sole space holder for them. And that's great. Like, that's wonderful. And at a certain point though, she can't be the sole space holder in your life. Like, you have to have other outlets and other containers. And there's some things like that I'll bring to like my men's group, that may even relate to my partner, but it's like maybe I just need to dump for 5 minutes and get and to receive reflections from the masculine experience that then I can go back to my relationship container and take radical ownership and do like and actually show up like how I want to show up instead of like in the moment projecting everything towards her and burdening her with all of my, work.
So well said. Yeah, thank you for that. So if we could like look under the hood of men, like what is this if somebody's listening and they're like, okay, men's group, men's work, men's group, men's work, like what's going on here?
Yeah, I love the question. Let's do it. I mean, so men's work, right? It's like this big umbrella and it could include so many different things, but like I would consider the conversation you and I are having, like it's below the surface. It's about real life stuff. It's about supporting each other. Like I would call this conversation men's work, having friendships like this. Of course, there are other things that look like men's work. For me, like most of my experience has been in men's groups. And so that can be a group of two or more people, like anywhere from, I've had men's groups where it's just been me and another guy, like all the way up to 30 or 40 guys. And there's just so much you can do, right? Like, so in my men's group, every other month, we typically just what I call flow. What's present? What's activated? What do you need to get off your chest? What do you need support with? And like, let's just follow those threads. And on the other months, I'll come up, I'll show up and have like either like a theme or an emotion that we're going to focus on, and then the like exercises, right? Like to get the men like comfortable, like in a vulnerable, expressive, type of way. Men's group includes like the breath work spaces that you hold, where yeah, there is sharing, like they're setting an intention and then there's integrating, but like the meat of the experience is like actually just you're in a room with men just breathing and allowing whatever wants to come up and feeling safe in that container. I mean, essentially, like that's a men's group as well, Yeah, I'll pause there because I know you can also add a lot of examples.
I was just going to share in like the breath work, particularly for our listeners, we're talking about here the context of like a transformational or holotropic style of breath work, which can be really cathartic and bring things up. So to the degree that things have been suppressed, they come out. But one of the values that I've seen and experienced as facilitator and participant in men's work is once that safety is established, there is stuff that will come up and out of men that won't typically conventionally come up within the context of groups where there are women present. And so as an example, well, the night that we were doing that breath work, my partner was actually hosting a women's group in the other studio,
Oh
in the
yeah,
other
that's
practice
right.
room in the studio. And so we're doing breath work, you know, closed private space. But typically, if I guide that breath work and it's mixed men and women, it's, you know, there's some sort of censorship, let's call it, of what comes out of us. And when in the uncensored version, it was like yelling, laughing, screaming, breathing, crying, heaving. I mean, every emotion in really big ways, like echoing through the walls of the space. And man, that was so powerful to just let it go, like let it be unleashed in that way, where that was the intention of that container to let it come up, out, and through. And that's not always the intention of every container, but it's the intention of that container. And I was packing up at the end of the night there was a note on the bar. I don't know if you saw it, but their group is called Wonder, the women's group. And it said, "Dear men, thank you for doing your work. Love the women of Wonder." Because they could hear the screaming coming through the walls.
Yeah.
And they were like, like, right, to have the reciprocal of that, they were like, right on, guys.
Yeah.
We know you need that. We don't want the sideways version coming out, manipulative, passive aggressive, et cetera, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. We want you to do your work. We know the truth. We know what's underneath that. We see it.
Yeah.
It's just so fucking cool to see, like, man, this is it. And I've seen you also do things like hikes and, you know, go have activities and stuff that you do together too. It's super cool. I want to make it to that. I saw you posted like, who's ready for another hike. I want to make it to one of those.
Yeah. Definitely. And it's like, it's because it doesn't, I like trying to, I guess, like dispel that perception of like, oh, that's uncomfortable. Like, I don't want to sit in a circle with guys and talk about my feelings and emotions. It's like, okay, let's just go for a hike. Let's just go for a hike and talk about life. And then maybe we pause on the trail and I, you know, kind of backdoor some sort of exercise or encourage some sort of share or something like that. And just give them a little bit of taste of, you know, what it is I like to do. But yeah, there's just so much you can do, you know. It's like, as long as everybody, you know, you don't even necessarily need to be speaking the same language either. You don't have to be all in the same place energetically or emotionally or have the same skill set. It's like, if you just show up and like say, I'm going to try to open my heart, or I'm just going to sit here and listen to other men. Like, that's amazing too.
One of the experiences I've had working with men predominantly in one-on-one coaching containers that I've seen is once there's like a safety of like, oh, I can actually share all of these things and you're not judging me and I feel safe enough to really open up and process is, what happens after? Like, how do I bring this work with me into my life? And I know we've explored a lot in sort of the coupleship container. So I wanted to drive this into a different context and look at, I've seen this pattern a lot where guys will do this work. They'll open up, they'll feel open, free, authentic in this space. And then they come back and they go, I don't know how to show up as my most authentic self when we're in a board meeting or we're in a sales meeting or I'm trying to, you know, work with a client or whatever it might be that's in the professional setting. I was wondering if you had any thoughts, tips, insights for guys about, especially because I know you show up as a lawyer. So, you know, wearing both those hats, but not necessarily keeping them compartmentalized. Like, how do you show up as your most authentic self in your role of attorney?
Yeah, that's a great question. And honestly, I'm still like working on meshing all of it. Cause for many years it was completely separate, but now it's just like, it's just integrating the awareness and the confidence that you kind of gain from, say, like doing your work or sitting in a men's group or something. And it can just be like integrating, like, I'm going to practice using my voice more instead of like constantly being talked down to and just like taking everything and then feeling overworked and underappreciated. Like, I'm going to just start to like use my voice a little bit more and see how people respond. And typically, like, when it's coming from that genuine place, people respond really well. And they're like, and it can be like, I remember for me, in my last job of in private practice, you know, working crazy hours and making crazy money, I got to the point where I was so overworked and burnt out, right? And I had no idea how to like tell my partners, you know, and my superiors, like, because it was just like, you just shut up and do the work. And yeah, and it's like this like silent agreement that everybody understands that it sucks, but you know, it is what it is. And so I remember one time like calling the partner that hired me and that I worked most closely with, and I just like, hey, can I close your door and just have a conversation with you? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And I remember opening up with him like where I was at, like with my mental health, and that I was struggling like with burnout, and it was like causing me really great anxiety, and at the same time I was dealing with like this wave of depression that I was stuck in, and that was really hurting my relationship, and I kept it really like genuine and succinct, you know, and like I didn't unload anything on him, and he was just like, wow, like, man, yeah, like that, like, dude, I'm so sorry. Like, what do you need? And I need time off. How much time do you need off? You could have as much time as you need off. We'll continue to pay you. You know, and it was just like, wow. Like, and this was somebody that I respected already, like on a personal level. You know, I was working with really genuine people who wanted to, like they were good people, like even when they weren't playing the lawyer role. But I was like really blown away to be like, whoa, like those were words that I was able to like express like with my partner or in my men's group. But now I just brought them to the real world and it was fully accepted. And I was just like,
I mean, one.
Yeah. So, but it's so scary to let, I remember like I shut his door and I'm like shivering because I'm so nervous. And it's like, completely normal. Like, let's normalize that. But like, let's like for me, that was an edge to integrate that into my professional life and be vulnerable. And I was met with like full acceptance, you know? So it's like, again, it's like shifting that perception, because it's, we have such a strong perception of like, oh, they're not going to understand. They're going to say this. They're not going to give me time off. I'm going to have to quit. And it's just like, it shifts so quickly and you're like, oh, shoot. Yeah. Like, okay, that wasn't so scary. I'm really glad I did that.
Yeah, it turns out fear doesn't kill us.
Exactly, right?
The willing assertion of boundary is what I heard in that as like the example, like I'm going to communicate. Here's an example of me embodying the work that I'm doing in the group here in the professional space is I'm going to communicate a need. I'm going to advocate for my needs in a conscious and skillful and genuine way that's authentic to myself. And it's almost like you set out like a sonar call that like activated the same space within him that his awareness got pulled down into. And then he could meet that need for you, which was great. And obviously that's not always going to be the case. Not all of our partners and coworkers have those capacities, and you know, bosses have those capacities and things like that. But for the parts of us that see and feel us showing up in that way, it's almost like regardless of his response, it would have been a win for you and between you and you. I'll share one that was super cool for me. I had this experience once of when you were talking about like toxic masculinity, this guy was like in the bravado version of it that you were depicting, he would be like the poster for that. And he owned a group of car dealerships, and the car dealerships were acting as the primary sponsor for a fundraising event that I had created for a nonprofit that I started. And he was introduced via a common friend, and I went in there. They shared with him about the event, the nonprofit, and he was, you know, really like all on board. Like, we're going to support it and we're going to raise money, and whatever money we don't raise from our private, we're all at my own private Christmas party, and we'll ask for donations, and whatever the gap is between what you're asking and what we raise, I'll fill it in from the dealership, and da 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 da. And so I have the event, I go. And oh, there's not there. There's no money. Oh, it'll come next week. Ah, I get kind of, and finally one day I meet with he sends his marketing guy out, and he gives me an envelope full of a bunch of individual checks written at his party for us. And then the sponsorship was like $12,000. And I think the checks amounted to like $3,000 or $4,000. So there's a pretty significant gap there. And so then I said, hey, can we talk about this? And he's like, oh, you have to make an appointment. Oh, they're not available. I'm getting the run around. So I reach out to the mutual friend, share what's happened. She's like, well, let me make an appointment and see if that opens up space here. So we go and we sit into his office upstairs in the car dealership, big office. You know, we're sitting across his desk. He's on the phone. And he's not ending his phone call while we're sitting right in front of him. He's doing that whole thing. Yeah. And then he hangs up the phone after probably 5 minutes of talking, leans forward, looks me right in the eye and says, what can I do for you? And like real aggressive in my face. And I take a deep breath and I go, well, to be honest, there's nothing that you can do for me. I'm not here for you to do anything for me. I'm here to do something for you. And his face gets literally red, and he sits back in his chair, crosses his arms, and just looks at me. And he's like, oh yeah? And I mean, uber defensive, dude. And so now we're in it, right? Like horn rock kind of thing. And I knew that if it became whose ego's bigger, it wouldn't work. Like, I'm not going to like arm wrestle him into like the sponsorship. So I just said, well, quite simply, you know, I said, I think you want to write me a check. And he's like, and he chuckles and he's like, yeah. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I really do. I said, you know, the truth be told is like, let's put down the show for a moment. Like, let's just be real that you, from your lips to God's ears and all of us sitting in the room, me, you, our mutual friend and your marketing guy, that we all know what you said. So we can drop the charade. So then it's just a question of that it's inconvenient because you were hoping to raise more money than you did. And now it's a question of rather whether you fulfill your word as a matter of integrity. But that also means you take a financial hit and you don't really want to do that because you're really attached to money. And so there, and we're just at that crossroads, and that's totally fine. That's not really one thing or another. It just is what it is. And I said, so you're probably, I'm guessing that you're under the, you know, comprehension of this experience that that you don't want to write me that check and it's not in your best interest. And I can totally understand the rationale for that. But here's the thing is, if you continue to move through life like that, you know, you're going to hit a point ultimately where you're nearing the end and you can't take the money with you. And that money wasn't even a lot of money, but the thing that you do take with you is your integrity and your karma and the kind of person that you've been, whether you were true to people with your word. And I think in that moment, we really put a bigger context around this moment by seeing that moment, you'll have wished that you had written me that check. But I also understand that maybe you haven't operated from that space before. So what I'm here to do is to give you an opportunity to come from that and try it out. And so here's what I'm willing to do. Write me a check for the difference to my nonprofit, and then and don't give it to me. Just feel what it feels like to write that check, and stick it in your desk drawer, and just feel that feeling. And if in a week, I'll call you in a week. And if in a week you want to give me that check, I'll come by and pick it up. And if you don't want to give me the check, or you ghost me or whatever, you'll never hear from me again. But my money's on you that you want to write me that check. Because I trust that when people feel what truth feels like in their being, they want to live in alignment with that. And he looks at his marketing guy and he says, go write him the check now. I don't have a week.
That's amazing. And yeah, I mean, and it's just, I feel like there's so many things to pull from that story. Like from your perspective, like I hear, you know, ask for what you want, but don't be attached to receiving it. And from his, it's like he was being called out, you know, like his integrity was on the line, right? It didn't matter about the money, right? The check didn't matter. The fact was like, he gave you the whole spiel of, yo, yes, 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 yes. And then when it came down to writing the check, he was like, what can I do for you? And like putting you beneath him as if like, you know, you weren't worth him keeping his word to. And you just like very genuinely and probably calmly called him out, right? Called him on his bullshit. And that's like so important, right? Because like that, as men, we could easily call each other out on our bullshit. But like, again, it's like in that like toxic kind of way. But like if we could just genuinely look at a man in the eyes and be like, hey, that actually doesn't, that's not true. Or that's not what you said. And I want to like call you out because you said you were going to do this or you said you wanted that. And now you're telling me something different. So like, are you impeccable with your word, or are you just like that loosey-goosey with your integrity, you know? And when you said that to him, you did give him that opportunity to be like, oh, he's calling me out. He's giving me the invite to like elevate my own integrity, like stick to my word. That's probably why he didn't even need to think about it. He was just like, fuck, he's right. Write in the check.
Write in the check. Yeah. It is true. I felt like it came as an invitation that said, instead of being in a power over dynamic or power on power over power under dynamic, let's just pick up a different dynamic and see what that feels like.
Yeah.
And that was such an example for me of bringing the work that I was doing in myself and my life and my relationships to a space that are otherwise inhabited and really littered by this sort of dynamic of this is what it's about and I will beat you at it. And instead of that, just going, let's just play a different game and see how it feels. And like how authenticity can change the entire experience that we're having professionally, and that in a more subtle sense, it's even beyond the words that come out and the strategies that we employ. It feels more like a quality of presence that is pervasive in those different environments that's even more felt than heard.
Yeah. Yeah. That really resonates, right? Like in these containers, in these spaces, like we get to find our true selves. We get to ground in it. And then, yeah, it's like, I tell my guys all the time, like, we're just getting in the reps here. Like we're flexing our vulnerability muscles and getting stronger. And then when you leave this space, like there will be ripple effects. It's going to start with your relationship with yourself, then your significant other, your children, your parents, and it's your colleagues. And it's going to continue to ripple. Right. And like, me, like in a very, like, I don't know, woo-woo spiritual way, like I believe like that could heal the world. Like you could change the world by just connecting with one guy, changing that guy's life, and then he's going to go, you know, with everybody that's in his life, it's just going to have a tremendous ripple effect, you know. And who knows, like that opportunity that you gave that car salesman, he immediately accepted the invitation. Like, then who knows what that turned into in his own life, like whether it was in his business or within his family, you know?
It's wild, isn't it? And it feels like it is the way that these paradigms will shift, is ground up, person to person, from the inside out. And it's not going to come from the system down. I don't foresee it like all of a sudden infusing to like where the billboards are like, guys, you know, you don't have to, you know, push so hard. You've already made it. You're already there. Like create from your overflow, you know, the entrenched, the structures themselves, it's as if they are infused with this idea and perpetuate it. And yet somehow as we have these conversations and it changes human to human, well, ultimately those humans enter into those structures, and then those structures change. And I wanted to use the last minutes of our conversation to look at maybe the deepest way in which these structures of consciousness are sustained and perpetuated, and also how they can shift, which is in maybe what I'll call the father wound, or at least the father imprint. I don't know that it's always a wound, but the father-son dynamic. I know that you're not a father, but from the experience of you're to whatever degree, and I honor that, you know, your agency and the depth of that you feel comfortable sharing, but the experience, even how you see it globally in like the father-son relationship. And then as you think about in your own journey, I don't know if you plan to, if you want to have kids and how you think about that, but what's your understanding and views on the way men's work could show up, maybe even what you've seen by guys in your group, in the space of the father-son relationship and modeling for our sons, you know, what this could look like?
Yeah. I mean, this is like almost like the wound, right, for the masculine. And I'll share just like a quick story. At my last men's group, I was running the guys through this exercise, like I call wagon wheel. And there's an inner circle and an outer circle, and the outer circle just keeps shifting. And for a minute, like I had a prompt for each of the guys to, like, you know, while they were looking the other guy and the man, they would answer the prompt, you know. And so at the end of the list of prompts I had, like my last two questions were, my relationship with my mother is, right? And then like tell the man across from you what that relationship is. And the last question was, my relationship with my father is. And all the guys like in both circles just went, like dreading that question. And so I only say that again to like kind of like bring back this theme of like what's most personal is most universal. There's so much to unpack in that like father son dynamic or wound or however you want to label it. And I'll give like even like a quick, like I'll ground what I'm trying to say like in my own experience, because something this week just happened actually. It was a trigger and an opportunity to be like, oh wait, what is that? So like my relationship with my father, I'll just say it's complicated, but there was one thing he ingrained in me as a young boy with three younger sisters. It was never hit a woman. You never hit a woman. Okay, Dad, I got that. And to this date, I've never hit a woman. However, I watched my whole childhood and adolescence, I watched my dad hit the dogs. And so now as an adult, you know, and I have a dog, I'm the adopted daddy to my fiance's golden doodle. And I'll so unconsciously and reactive, like if he gets into something or he loves to eat toilet paper rolls, and sometimes it's fine. And then other times, like so unconsciously, I'll just like go into a moment of rage where I'll like slap him on the butt or I'll like give him a smack on the head, you know? And I did this the other night. And as we were walking the dog, like right before going to bed, and it triggered my fiance, like, so, and which was so reasonable, right? Like, this is her baby. And he found something on the street and started chewing on it. And like, I just so unconsciously went to that place of like reaction where I smacked him on the head. And that caused like a deep, like, trigger for her, you know, like made her feel unsafe. And I was like, oh, whoa, like the light finally got shown, like, pointed towards this thing that I do or this condition that I have. And like, I got to then not only feel her emotion, I got to then sit with my own shame, right? Because I felt very shameful. I love my dog. I've been vegan for 8 years now. I'm very compassionate towards animals. Why am I hitting the dog for doing something that he's, you know, ingrained to do, which is eat? I was like, wow, like for the first time, I just realized like my whole life, my dad hit our dogs. He never hit a woman, but he would hit the dog. And so like, I learned that that was okay. Right. Like the dog was beneath us. And the reason why I'm sharing this story is because like, yeah, I don't have kids, but what if I did? Like, not saying that my father hit me, but like, what if that like unconscious sideways aggression that I've been allowing to come out of me like in my whole adult life, what if that was directed towards a kid? Like, how traumatizing would that be, not only for myself, but then for that kid, you know? So I say all of this for a couple of reasons. One is like, nobody's perfect. Like even me, who's like steeped in men's work and holding space and working one-on-one with men, like I still fuck up and make mistakes myself. And two, it's like a lot of men go to retreats or go to men's groups. And if their fathers, when they start expressing and I ask them, what do you want? All they want is more connection with their wives and their kids. And they feel so much, you know, shame for not being present with their kids or being too hard on them or you know, hitting them or whatever it is. And it's like, okay, well, what do you want to do about it? Like, and you ask a man who's now opened his heart, shared his feelings, and you say, well, what do you want to do about it? And they go, oh, I don't want to do what I've been doing. Okay, so what do you want to do? And they can now like start to break those patterns and be like, well, I just want to be more present and accessible for my kids. Okay, like, well, what does that look like? What do you think your kids want out of your presence and your access, you know? And it's like, sometimes like we, or I can't say we, because I'm not a father, but what I have experienced is like, some fathers haven't been asked those questions. They've just been repeating the same patterns that they themselves experienced with their father, right? And it's like this generational wheel just keeps going. And like people like to talk about generational trauma and stuff. And like, again, trauma can be such a loaded word, so I like don't want to throw that out there. But right, like if I had projected my sideways anger not at my dog but at like a kid, like that's repeating, that's generational trauma, right? And so again, I share all this because it's just so important for men to have spaces to be able to explore this, right? Like for a man to even admit that his anger comes out sideways and projected at the dog or the kids, like he's never been able to admit that to his friends or his wife, you know? Because he's just been so like maybe it's been projected at him and he's been criticized and he's aware of it. But like, how do we then break the pattern if we don't have the space to say, here's this thing I do, this is how I feel, I want to change, and like, here's what I'm willing to do about it?
Wow. Sorry, was there more?
Yeah. No, I'm going to pause there.
Well,
Because
thank you so much.
I actually even forgot your question, so I don't know where I was going next.
Well, it was really just about the father wound, and then you were given the example, and with your dog, and I really want to thank you for the vulnerability and what you just shared. That it's one thing to share, even in the group when we know we've sealed the container, but podcasts are porous by definition, and it just speaks to how grounded you are in the work that you do. And I recognize the maturation in your being to be able to do that. And I know that's going to be a very real moment for people listening that are going to feel really lifted by that share right there and the vulnerability implicit within it. And I hope it inspires that, kind of an experience where we can, find the safe containers for us, where we can say, this is the thing that I don't want to admit, and I'm going to say it out loud, and let it be seen, and realize it doesn't make me un anything. It doesn't make me unlovable. It doesn't make me unworthy. It doesn't make me unready. It doesn't invalidate me from my right to lead these groups. The story we say, it's like, no, it's what makes you real, relatable, human, and why you are so suited to do the work that you do. And it inspires other people to lead with vulnerability and true consciousness. And that's something that, we can't really attach words to and communicate the value and importance and impact of. So thank you for that, for sharing that story. And it touches my heart, man. And I hope for everybody that joined us today and got a chance to just feel into, first and foremost, you and your energy and the work that you do. Please reach out to Josh if he can be of support. If you're local to the South Florida area, Jupiter, Florida, Northern Palm Beach County, Southern Martin County, that area, he does run a group, and you can reach out to learn more. And regardless of where you are, know that you're not alone in moving through these things. I hope, if nothing else, this conversation aired out what so often is suppressed, and some of the things that we journey through as guys. And that if you're in that space of shaming or suppressing, hiding or acting it out, and you do feel inclined to reach out for support, please know there are resources here for you. Even beyond us sitting here, we have access to people in different places, different tools. And please just know that you don't have to suffer in silence, that we can reach out for each other. And there are communities of guys that are doing this work on themselves, and there's nothing that you can say that you've done or experiencing that it somehow excludes you from your right to do this work. And I think that having that circle of conscious brotherhood is so important to have. And so that the need, not just the desire, but the need for belonging, is met. And that all the parts of us that are exiled off within us all belong to us to that degree as well. Thank you for joining me today. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we close the conversation?
I'm deeply honored that you asked me to join you in this conversation today. I had a blast. I feel like we could talk for 2 more hours. I'll just echo some of those things you just said. As a man, you don't have to suffer in silence. What you are experiencing and what you're feeling is so normal and it's so relatable. And there are thousands of other men out there who are going through or have gone through similar experiences that you're going through. And I know you and I are both located in the Jupiter, Florida area. But as you mentioned, like these containers, they exist with, you know, because of the internet and amazing technology and Zoom and stuff. Like there's countless virtual containers and communities, and there's organizations like Everyman and Sacred Sons and all kinds of stuff that is out there, whether it's retreats, men's groups, one-on-one coaching, whatever it is. It's like, don't suffer in silence. Just try something, you know, and watch it all like unfold and change your life. And then just like the last thing that I'll say is like, it might feel so scary to do that, to take that first step. Like it could literally feel like you're dying, right? To express some of the stuff that is so, constricting in your mind and in your body and stuff. But when you do it, man, it's like, it's what we were talking about, like liberation, right? But like when you do that, or when I see another man do that, I instantly, my heart's connected to him. I respect him. I look up to him. And like, in me, in my personal opinion, like that's the masculine. Like that is being a man. Like being in touch with your emotions, expressing them in healthy ways, showing up in the world in like authentic, grounded, genuine, like non-conditioned and non-reactive patterns. Like that's what it's like. That's what it is to be a man. That's what it's like to heal the world, to heal everybody in your life. And yeah, I'll just end it with that.
I can't think of a more powerful, clear, beautiful, and appropriate way to close the podcast out than that. So thank you so much, Jocelyn Veer. Thank you, thank you, thank you for joining me. Thank you for the trust in opening up and hopping on here. And I appreciate you and I appreciate your work. And for everybody tuning in, thank you. Thank you for creating the time in your life to join us for this conversation and just prioritizing this work in your lives. If you know someone in your life that this would be beneficial for, send it to a guy in your life. You know, what would that look like if everybody shared this conversation with one guy and then they kept it going wow, man, that's the ripple effect. So really grateful and honored to be in this conscious discourse with everyone that's involved in the work. And thank you again, Josh, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks, brother.
You're welcome. Thank you too.